Today is November 15th, and it is Tuesday night, Shari Tefillah. We're learning Masechet Baba Kama, and we have managed to reach now the second chapter, Mishnah 3, of the Masechet. So let's begin right away with Mishnah 3, and I'm sure that as we read it, we will go back to earlier Mishnayot to remember things that might be necessary. Let's see. So the third Mishnah, Mishnah Gimel, of Perek Bet, says as follows. Hakelev Hagdi Shekapsu Mirosh Hagag Vishibru at the Kelim Mishalem Nezek Shalem Mipenei Shehen Muadim. And that's all we need to begin with. The second part of the Mishnah is another thought. So let's stop here and read again and understand. Vakelev Hagdi Shekapsu Mirosh Hagag, right? The dog and the Gedi, the kid, that jumped from the top of the roof. Vishibru et kelim, and broke the utensils, vessels, furniture. Vishalem nizek shalem, which obviously means that the owner of these two animals pays nizek shalem, full damage. Mipnei she'en muadim, because they are considered to be muadim, forewarned.
Well, that's what these animals do.
That's what they do. They're jumpers. Now, I didn't particularly know that concerning dogs in our day.
I didn't know about dogs, but kids and goats jump. They jump all the time.
But I guess we have to take it at face value.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the dogs we have today aren't the same breeds of dogs they had then. And I guess dogs jumped. So anyway, it's kind of a funny Mishnah, but there's a lot of things to think about here. I have three questions that I put on the sheet before we get to the sources. One is very easy. One is, what is the meaning here of the letter Vav that is appended to the word Hagdi?
Right.
It doesn't have to be that they both jumped at the same time. Right. No. In either case, either this or that, if they jumped from the top of the roof, etc., the din applies. That's, of course, pretty clear. Question number two. What different questions would we have to ask and answer in order to understand the ruling in the first half of the Mishnah, what we just read? So, okay, so it says Nezek Shalem, mm-hmm. and it says they are Muadin,
mm-hmm.
but exactly, what are the circumstances?
Well, whose property?
Don't we need to know whose property? Which,
whose property? Mm-hmm. Whose property what? They jumped from or jumped to?
Oh. Yeah, I was assuming they were both in the... Yeah, if they jumped from somebody's private property into the public domain.
Yeah.
Well, the question of is it... Did they jump from the owner's property into either public domain or some other private domain?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the first question is the location.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that. Is it, what's important, the domain they jumped from or the domain they jumped into?
From. To decide who pays.
The owner of the animals pay.
Okay.
Right, the owners pay.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like the war, like the knife on the that you leave out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't really matter where you leave it.
Is that true?
I don't know. It just reminded me of it.
Well, first of all, the case of the boar, that's when there is a takala, mm-hmm. a stumbling block in Reshut HaRabim.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens with the stumbling block is that the person who is damaged walks into it. But here, that's not the case.
No.
Here, mm-hmm. something came and did damage. So it's not a boar. It's an animal. The question is it Shane, Regel, or Karen? That's the question. Mm-hmm. And secondly, the question is the matter of domain. But within the matter of domain, I'm asking again, does it matter where he jumped from, or does it matter where he jumped to, or do both matter?
Well, last week, or the week before last, we were talking about an animal sticking his nose into a shop.
Mm-hmm.
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 And if his, did it matter
where the rest of him was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was the idea, though, that it was responsible for a full amount if he put his head in the shop and did some damage because it's private property.
Private domain.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where he jumps from. What's important is where he jumps to.
Because if this is Reshut HaRabim...
Say it again, please.
If he jumps into
Reshut HaRabim,
then can you then say that Nezek Shalem does not apply because you expect these animals to be jumping? But the question then is, did he come out of a private domain into the public domain, or was this animal in the public domain?
To begin with.
Both.
Well, Gog, though, is going to be private.
Gog should
though.
Be a private domain. Mm-hmm.
Gog is always is going to be private.
What if he's jumping over and lands in the Reshut HaRabim?
Well, you don't expect somebody. I mean, I don't think you expect something to jump from private to public.
From private to public. Mm-hmm. Well, you do. My sister's dog does that all the time.
Okay, but do you have? I don't know if you function. Okay, but I don't know if you function when, let's say, you're walking. I don't know, through a marketplace or something.
Well, wait a second. Let's think of the halakha.
Okay.
So let's say the dog jumped to the public domain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what's the law of an animal doing damage in the public domain? Let's check out Shane, Regel, and Karen.
Okay.
So if it's Regel and Shane, we know what
to do.
And the law is what in the public domain?
Half. If it's what it's expected to do, isn't it half?
No.
No.
The law is?
There's nothing.
Nothing.
There's
no nothing. Right?
Yeah,
nothing. If an animal...
So you're saying that this dog is bad?
Hold your dogs. Wait a second. Hold your dogs. Wait a second. Let's
only
remember what we've learned. If you have an animal,
mm-hmm.
right, that tramples someone else's kelim, peirot, yerakot, vegetables, fruit, possessions in the Reshut HaRabim, that animal's owner is patur completely, we've learned, because the Reshut HaRabim is made for animals. And they walk. And when they walk, things they walk on get damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And if the animal walks on your fruit in Reshut HaRabim, well, you should have known not to put your fruit there because the Reshut HaRabim is made for animals walking.
Right.
It's like if you take your milk carton that you just bought at Tom Thumb and you put it in the middle of the left-hand lane on 635 and you go blame the car for damaging your milk carton. What do you mean? 635 is made for cars. The Reshut HaRabim is made for animals. And the same thing applies not only, we said, for Regel, but for Shane. If the animal eats your fruit in Reshut HaRabim, well, tough luck to the owner of animal. Reshut HaRabim is made for animals, and what animals do when they're walking is they not only trample, they also eat.
Mm-hmm.
But Karen.
So Karen is a different story we've learned.
And is Karen Muadim?
So we learned that in Karen there's a distinction between Tam and Muad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes.
The normal ox that gores in Reshut HaRabim has to pay how much?
Half.
Unless it's known to be, it's done three times.
Because it's Tom.
So my dog is Tom.
Oh, wait a second. Let's apply it in a second. Let's just wait.
Yeah.
Remember the law. But if the animal's Mu'ad because it did it three times, so then it has to pay Nezek Shalem. Now, why does a Tom have to pay Chatzi Nezek, whereas if it just trampled or ate, doesn't it pay at all? Because Reshut HaRabim is made for animals, and animals normally trample and eat, but they don't normally gore.
Okay.
If they gore, that's something that the owner of the ox that's gored, or the fruit that was gored, you can't say to him, you should have been careful, because that's what Reshut HaRabim is made for. No, Reshut HaRabim is not made for goring oxes.
No, okay. Or biting dogs.
So then we get to dogs. So how do dogs fit into this? Well, in our particular case, this dog jumped. And the pshat of the sentence is that in the jump, it broke the kelim. It jumped on the jumped on the kelim.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So let's see. So if it's Reshut HaRabim,
mm-hmm.
then why would it say here that he has to pay Nezek Shalem? If it's called Karen, he wouldn't have to pay at all. I'm sorry. If it's called Shane Beregel, he wouldn't have to pay at all. If it's called Karen, have to pay Chatzin Nezek.
Yeah.
And it doesn't say this dog has jumped three times in the past to make it a Mu'ad.
So it has to be into the private.
So it has to be into the private domain.
Yeah.
Okay.
It looks like this is a dog that jumped into the private domain. So once it jumped into the private domain, and in its jumping, it broke the kelim. It jumped onto your, what should we say, onto your
water barrel.
Water barrel, or your roses, mm-hmm. And it broke the roses of the water barrel. So, should we say that it's like Shane Veregel? Well, what's the characteristics of Shane Veregel? That's what animals normally do. So if we say that dogs and goats are normally jumping, if we would make such an assumption, then we'd understand why it has to pay Nezek Shalem.
I would with a goat.
So I guess that when you have your dog on your roof, you don't expect it to stay, or you expect it to jump.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, dogs jump out of the bed of a pickup truck. They're always jumping out of those. I mean, they do jump out of things.
Okay.
So they have to pay, the owner has to pay half.
It says here, Nezek Shalem, full.
Nezek is full, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
The word Nezek means damage, the word Shalem, like Shalom, means full.
Okay.
So it looks like the easiest, most straightforward way to read this is that these animals jumped into the private domain, and that's what these animals do, so they're considered mu'adim for that. And since they did it in the private domain, like Shane Veregel, it's Nezek Shalem.
So do you think that this is in here just as an exercise to kind of get people to go through back and figure this out like we just did? Why did they put this in?
So that's the question I asked in number B3. We'll get to that in a moment. Mm-hmm. B3. What is the point, the chidush of this Mishnah? Right, that's your question?
That's
mm-hmm.
my question.
So if we're... Now there's one other thing we have to bring up. Karen, we said, only pays Chatzi Nezek when it's Tam, and Nezek Shalem when it's Muad. In this case, we don't understand how it could be Karen, because if it was Tam, it would be Chatzi Nezek. And how could it be Muad? We didn't say it jumped three times. However, we learned about a machloket concerning Karen b'reshut ha-yechid.
Karen.
Right, the law of Karen that pays Tam Chatzi Nezek and Muad Nezek Shalem is in Rishut HaRabim. What about Karen Rishut HaYechid, the private domain? Let's say the dog jumped into the private domain, just as it says. Perhaps we don't have to say that this is a category of Shane or Regel, perhaps it's a category of Karen, if we hold, according to those who hold, that Karen in Rishut HaYechid pays Nezek Shalem. We said it's a machloket.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the last Mishnah of the previous Perek said it pays Nezek Shalem, Karen v'Reshut HaYechid.
Mm-hmm.
That was Mishnah 4 of the previous Perek.
Is that the one with the animal going into the store?
Not that one. But if you look at the last Mishnah of the previous chapter, it gave us a whole list of those that are mu'adim.
Like tigers and snakes. And
Before the tigers and the snakes, it said, Vishur hamazik birshut anizak. If anyone finds the place, then we can tell the others where exactly it is. Right in the middle of the last Mishnah of the previous chapter. Vishur hamazik birshut anizak. And that was in a list of mu'adim, animals that have to pay full damage. And there it says that the shur hamazik in the reshut hanizak. And it's talking about Karen, because if it was Shein Veregel, then they always have to pay in reshut hanizak nisak shalem. Anyway, so when we learned that, we said that that last Mishnah goes according to the opinion that holds that Karen pays Nesek Shalem in Reshut HaNizak, Reshut HaYechid. So that brings us back to the question, our dog, he's certainly in Reshut HaYechid, but do we classify what he did as Karen, and say it's going according to those who said that Karen Reshut HaYechid is Nesek Shalem, or do we say that Shein Deregel? Both possibilities are there. Which brings me to the last question, question three. Given the context of this Mishnah, which of the interpretations brought up in the answer to the previous question would seem to be more likely? In other words, this Mishnah we're learning right now, in its context, is it most probably talking about Karen or talking about Shein Deregel?
Mm.
For that, you have to look at the previous Mishnayot,
which was
of this Perek.
Shein.
So look at the previous Mishnayot. What does Mishnah Bet say? Mishnah Bet of Perek Bet, right? Says Ketzad Hashein Muedit. It's talking about Shein. The Mishnah before that, Mishnah Aleph of Perek Bet, Ketzad HaRegel Muedit. It's talking about Regel. Shein. So in other words,
so
our...
maybe this one would be Karen, because we haven't talked about that one.
Or the opposite. It's not talking about Karen, because the parak is not talking about Karen.
So maybe we don't need to look at the earlier ones. Maybe they don't give us any information.
Well, it turns out now that they give information, but we have a machloket where that information leads us. There's another reason, though. I would say from the context we're talking about Shein Deregel, not Karen, there's another simple reason. Because if you say we're talking about Karen, then you have to say our Mishnah goes according to one opinion, not another. Only one opinion says that Karen in Reshut HaYechid pays Nesek Shalem. There's a machloket, which I kind of come back to, actually in Mishnah Hay, in the fifth Mishnah of this chapter. But anyway, it looks like it really is, like I said, Shein v'Karen in specific. I'm sorry, Shein v'Regel. It's most possibly, probably we should call it, Regel. And we'll explain why in a minute as we read the Me'iri. It's probably Regel b'Reshut HaNizak. Nezek Shalem. Because just like dogs and animals normally walk, they normally jump. And when they walk, they trample. When they jump, they fall on things. So let's see what the Me'iri says about all this. The Me'iri, this is Beta Bichira L'Rabbeinu Menachem HaMe'iri. We're in Provence now in the 13th century. And he wrote, the Me'iri wrote an encyclopedic commentary in the whole Talmud. And he explains what we just have been learning. It says, Perush, Shehinichum Balehem Berosh Hagag Hasamuch Lechatziro Shozeh. Translation. Perush, the interpretation, that the owners placed them on the top of the roof that was adjacent to the courtyard of Ze, of him, as of the neighbor. V'kavtsu b'chatser, and they jumped into the other courtyard. V'shibru et hakelim, and they broke the vessels. B'kfitzatam, in their jump. Aleihem. And they're jumping upon the vessels. Mishalmim nesek shalem. They pay full damage. Sharei darkan bechach. Because behold, that's their way. That's what animals do. At least this type of animal. V'nizkei haregel bechatser nizakhem. And this is called nizkei haregel. Damage of the regel. Bechatser nizak. In the courtyard of the damage-e. So he makes it very clear. The Me'iri is always very clear. The clearest of the Rishonim is the Me'iri. It's Regel in Reshut HaNizak, which is Nesek Shalem. So I gave us here three questions on this Me'iri. And they should help us to really solidify our understanding of what's going on. How can the Me'iri classify this case as Regel after he makes it clear that the damage was not necessarily caused by the animal's Regel, but rather by its body? It says they jumped on the vessel and broke the vessel with their body, not necessarily with their regel. So why is it called regel?
Wasn't there something about leaning and rolling? Or
yes, and that was Karen.
Yes.
That was all Karen. So you just make the question stronger.
I'm sorry.
Why is it called regel?
They're not leaning.
Wait, we learned earlier that if an animal lies down mm-hmm. on your tomato sauce and ruins it, that's called Karen.
Mm-hmm.
So here the animal is lying down from 10 feet high on your tomato sauce, and it's called,
anywhere
not regel, but it's called, I'm sorry, it's not called Karen, it's called regel. Why? What's the difference?
Well, the regel is a natural, I guess that it has to do with the natural movement, and that the walk...
This is a natural movement.
Right. That's the answer. Right, regel doesn't literally mean with the feet.
Uh-huh.
It means, just like Jeremy said, damaging in a natural movement. Whereas, an ox lying down on your tomato sauce, that's not a natural movement. Oxen usually don't lie down. They walk, and they eat, but they don't lie down. But here, the animal did what it normally does, is to jump. Mm-hmm. And in its jump, it fell on something.
Okay.
That's a natural locomotion, and that's the definition of regel. And regel pays nesek shalem in reshut hanizak. Now, if, of course, the dog had jumped on your to your tomato sauce in reshut harabim, would be a whole different can of tomato sauce.
Yeah.
Second question. What would be the law if the damage did not occur in the course of the jump itself, but rather afterwards, when the animal trampled Kalim while walking in the courtyard, if it kicked Kalim while walking in the courtyard? What would the law be?
Why wouldn't it be the same?
Exactly! It would be the same.
Mm-hmm.
It would be the same. So then why did the Miri emphasize that the animal did damage bikfitzatam while it was jumping? Because you're right, Mary Beth. The exact same thing though would be if the animal jumped and didn't land on the kelim, but then walked on the kelim. There would still be regel brishut hanizak and has to pay nezek shalem. So why does the Meiri emphasize, and this is basically my next question, what would seem to be the point, the chidush of this part of the Mishnah?
Is this as a way to emphasize that this particular form of type of damage in the terms of how it occurs is regel?
Yes. In other words, the whole point of the Mishnah is to tell you not to think that if the animal jumped on your tomato sauce, that that's Karen.
Oh.
Exactly what you said 2 minutes ago is the whole point. Don't think that it's Karen, but rather, since it's a natural movement, it's regel. Now, all the more so, is the law the same if the animal jumped and then walked on your tomato sauce? But that's not the chidush. It's true that that's necessary, but it's not the chidush. The chidush, the point is, even if it fell on the tomato sauce while it was jumping, it's regular.
Okay.
Nezek shalem. So the point of this Mishnah is to define for us regular. Mm-hmm. And it's not just with the feet. It's any mm-hmm. natural locomotion.
Okay. So if your chicken flies through the window, then breaks it.
If your chicken, very good. Well, chickens don't fly, right? But
they do.
They do?
Yeah.
Very, very, like, very limited.
Kind of like cockroaches. They're mm-hmm. kind of awful when they fly. They just go, and they break things.
Okay. So, no, but I'm still not sure, because even though you say chickens fly, they don't normally fly.
Yeah, they do.
They just don't
do a very good job.
If you have them in a free range type of, they can wander about,
they can fly up on a roof.
They're not up on a roof.
They can fly up to a roof.
So will a turkey.
And they love to fly down too, because then they can glide.
So will a turkey.
They want to fly.
They
just don't fly very well.
Right. I've only seen caged chickens. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I can just think of something else. We've learned that if an animal rubs against something and ruins it, mm-hmm. that's Karen. Mm-hmm. But that's mm-hmm. only when it rubs against it in order to rub. But if the animal is normally walking and happens to rub your tomato sauce with its body, that's regular. Right?
Okay. Well, yeah.
So there's different types of rubbing.
This is, I can see where it would lead to disagreement.
Mm-hmm. It's all the question of what's normal and therefore to be expected, and therefore the owners have to be on guard against it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The owners have to be on guard against normal, natural, expected things. And it's a totally natural thing to have flying dogs. As well, normal as if they have flying chickens. Flying goats.
Yeah, flying goats. I still want to make these dogs that they
have. Oh, dachshunds. Dachshunds love to jump.
Really?
Yes. Those little things?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's amazing. They will jump over, like you can have a gate, you know, halfway up the door and they'll jump over.
With those tiny legs?
Yes.
Okay. So now we reach the next part of our Mishnah. Going back to the text of the Mishnah, it says, "Hakelev shenatal et acharara, v'halach lagadish, achal et acharara vidlik et hagadish, al acharara mishalem nezek shalem, v'al hagadish mishalem chatsi nezek." Translation: the dog that took the cake and went to the haystack, ate the cake and ignited the haystack. On the cake, the owner pays Nezek Shalem, and on the haystack pays half. So you're asking, what's going on here?
Well, dogs will steal food.
Dogs will steal food. Where was this food stolen from?
It must have been on the fire. Must have had something hot to it.
Right. A harara is a cake that's baked directly on the coals. Mm-hmm. So the dog took the cake, and unbeknownst to him, a coal was stuck to the bottom of the cake. Mm-hmm. He didn't eat the coal when he ate the cake. It rather fell off, and he'd lick at the gadish, and it lit up the haystack. So we have to figure out how to classify what's going on here. So let's go through the questions I have. The first question, what is the connection between the two halves of the Mishnah?
Well, stealing some food, a dog stealing food is also a natural behavior.
But first of all, you're right, but just first what Mary Beth said, it's a dog.
Right.
In other words, the first time our tractate has mentioned dogs, mm-hmm. and they're both in the same Mishnah. They were twins.
But then to me, a dog is, I'm assuming, considered a domestic animal.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. And of course, we're talking now, again, not about Karen, but about Shane Varegel, this time particularly Shane, that it ate what it normally eats, and dogs eat cake. Let's go to the second question, which we did already. If indeed he'd lick at the Gadish, what must we assume as to where the Hara was taken from and as to what is adhering to it? That's easy, we just said. Question three, mm-hmm. how would we classify and understand the ruling that says, Al Harara Mishalem Nezek Shalem? On the cake, the owner of the dog pays Nezek Shalem. Okay, so we just said it's obviously Shane, it's eating what it normally eats. And where was the harara? In Reshuta Rabim or in Reshuta Yechid?
Hayechid.
Because if it had been in Reshuta Rabim, then ala harara, Mishalem gornished.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Tough luck.
Tough luck. But the dog must have broken into someone's yard. Mm-hmm. Where they have their open air oven, mm-hmm. and it stole the harara. So that is Reshut HaNizak, and there Shane pays Nezek Shalem. However, we have
the haystack.
No, we have the haystack.
Another question. If the dog ate the cake in Reshut HaNizak, then of course, it is of course, Shein Reshut HaNizak, Netzuk Shalem. Mm-hmm. But our dog took the cake. Where did it take the cake to? Now, if it took the cake to the haystack that's on the property still of the owner of the cake, that's simple. Mm-hmm. What happens if the dog took the cake to someone else's haystack?
Well, it doesn't
or a haystack
really
in Reshut HaRabim. And says Mary Beth, it doesn't really matter, which is very possible. Why wouldn't it matter?
Well, because if it's on somebody else's property, the owner of the dog still has to pay something. And if the haystack is out in the road, I mean, unless it just fell off a truck or something, it's a place. I mean, that haystack belongs to somebody.
But, so let's say it's in Reshut HaRabim, though. Let's say that the dog ate the cake.
It doesn't say the haystack is improperly where it is. The haystack is just there. So it must be properly.
It could belong to the city of Dallas. Say it again?
Then you owe to the city of Dallas. You owe.
It's the Reshut HaRabim, though.
Well, if the haystack belongs to someone. A haystack is valuable, and if it belongs to someone, if it gets destroyed, then...
No, talk about the cake.
The cake that... Maybe I'm oversimplifying, but the cake... The owner doesn't cease to own the cake when it leaves his Reshut.
But had my dog eaten your cake in the Reshut HaRabim, we all know that the owner of the dog would have to pay nothing.
Cake didn't start out in Reshut HaRabim.
So that's the question
it's
now.
Because he took it from the...
Okay, so that's the question.
What is the question?
To Reshut HaRabim.
So the question that I'm asking is...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Given that Shein B'Reshut HaRabim pays Gornish, and given that Shein B'Reshut HaNizak pays Netzuk Shalem, so what happens with a smart dog... The dog says, look, I learned in Mishnah class that Shein B'Reshut HaRabim doesn't pay anything. So I'm a smart dog and I want to save my owner some money. So I'll go steal a cake from Reshut HaNizak, but I'll eat it in Reshut HaRabim. And Shein in Reshut HaRabim pays nothing.
It depends on where the cake came from.
So you said depends where the cake came from. And we all kind of say that intuitively. What does it matter where it ate it? But wait a second. It did eat it in Reshut HaRabim.
Yeah.
But that's if somebody left their cake there.
Right, so you say, very good.
So it does
the reason
matter
in Reshut HaRabim that the Shein pays Gornish is because you shouldn't have left your cake there. But if I left my cake in Reshut
HaRabim,
I left it in my own property, what does it matter where the dog ate it? Okay, so very good. So this actually comes up in the Gemara, believe it or not. And actually depends on a careful reading of the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah says, I'm reading it again, Hakelev shenatal et acharara v'halach l'gadish hachal et acharara v'dlika d'gadish al acharara mishalem nesek shalem. We'll end there for the moment. So, why does it say that halach l'gadish, that the animal went to the haystack? That's clearly important for the law that it states later, that if it ignited the haystack, you have to pay Nesek Shalem.
Right.
Is it also relevant for the law of the Harara, or is it not relevant for the law of the Harara?
That it went to a haystack?
The haystack.
The haystack.
So, I might say that the taking the cake to the haystack is mentioned only for the law of the haystack, the law of the lighting of the haystack. It's not relevant for the law of the harara. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I might say, let me collect my thoughts a second. Wait a second, perhaps that's not right. But it ate it here. So I changed my mind of what I was going to say. It does say that the dog ate the harara after taking it someplace. Mm-hmm. And it still says you have to pay nesek shalem. So it really does seem to support what you all are saying. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, you say that this law is only true if the dog went to a haystack, which is numerally reshut ha-yechid. But what if it went to reshut rabim?
And just ate the...
And ate the hara there. Perhaps the Mishnah leaves the door open that might not have to be paid for at all.
What that says, if somebody comes to your house and steals something and they manage to get away, that they can just take it.
Are you equating thieves and dogs?
Yes.
No, the dog... No.
Well, what you're saying is if the dog gets away with it, it's okay.
No, human beings are responsible for their actions. Dogs... Just do things.
And dog owners are responsible for dog owners.
But not always, only under certain predefined mm-hmm. conditions. And Shein Bereshuta Rabim is Patur.
Mm-hmm. Dog owners not responsible if the dog manages to leave the premises. That just doesn't make sense.
Mm. Rabbi.
I tend to agree with you, it doesn't make sense. I'm just preparing you for what the Gemara says.
Okay.
What if
I'm waiting.
What if your first line of reasoning was correct, and we're saying this only for the Kaddish, right? And then why then would it say anything about Allah ha-hara mishalem nezek shalem? In case you should think, in this case you only pay chatzin nezek, but because we didn't mention nezek shalem, we don't pay anything for the hara.
Right, Kaddish, but it's obviating what it's proving wrong. What I'm saying,
yeah.
You're saying.
I don't know. I'm just saying maybe that's a different line of reasoning, that we're not saying anything about what would happen if there weren't hay as much as we're saying what would happen if there were, and we happen to say what would happen about the harara in case somebody should say it didn't mention anything about the harara, so if it burns the hay, we only worry about the hay and not the harara. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Well,
right?
We have to pay for the harara.
Right.
Nizek Shalem.
Right.
Okay. Let's go on to another question. So we did question three. So question four. To what earlier material that we learned is the above mentioned ruling related? That's just to remind us, of course, that we've been talking about Shein in Mishnah Bet, right? So this Mishnah Gimel, so the part about the jumping dog, that's a clarification of the matters of Regel mentioned in Mishnah Aleph,
right.
Whereas the second part of the Mishnah is a clarification of the matters of Shein mentioned in Mishnah Bet. So we're learning that Shein pays Nezek Shalem even under these conditions that are being discussed here. Let's just do questions 5 and 6. What might be the importance of the fact that the dog natal tachara before eating it? As we just said, perhaps it's telling us that even if it took it someplace else, it still has to pay nezek shalem. Could be. And that would be very satisfying to Mary Beth.
Well, I wouldn't even think you would need to say it.
I understand. And now the last question is going to this other matter of the gadish, the hay. In what different ways might we understand the ruling that al hagadish mishalem nezek chatzin nezek? So, in other words, why, if this dog unwittingly took the coal and it fell on the haystack and burned up Donald Trump's mansion, why does the owner of the dog have to pay only chatzin nezek?
Wouldn't this be like Karen, where it's not
you're not expecting a dog to set fire to a haystack.
That's what the Rambam says.
Yeah, you wouldn't. It's not so much you wouldn't expect. Well, you wouldn't expect that. You wouldn't expect it would be a chance occurrence, an unlikely thing that the cake would have this coal, this live coal.
Right.
On it.
That's the Rambam. Any other possibilities of understanding why we only have to pay Nizek Shalem?
Nizek.
It's a secondary. It's a.
Right, Hatsi. It's a secondary.
It's a
right,
secondary.
Which we call with what Hebrew word? Actually, what is the example?
Oh, toldot.
Toldot. No. Toldot is a secondary category, but gen means secondary in the sense it's not directly caused by the animal, it's caused by a causation.
Is it that little rocks thing?
Right.
Yeah.
The old stir of the little rocks, the tzorot.
Yeah,
tzorot. Right, that's what Rashi says. So it's a machloket here between Rashi and the Rambam. Is the kol chatzinezik because it's mishuneh, because it's different, like keren, or is it because it's kolcho? It's not the animal itself, it's the secondary, which is tzorot also chatzinezik. Let's just see the machloket between the Rambam and Rashi. You ready? The Rambam says, it's the first commentary, hine be'ochlo hauga. Osek hedarko umishalem nezek shalem. Translation, and behold, in its eating of the cake, it's doing in its normal way and pays nezek shalem. Ubehadliket the gadish mishune. But the lighting of the hay is mishune. It's out of the ordinary. It's strange. Lefichach yishalem chatzin nezek. Therefore, it pays chatzin nezek. In other words, it's like Karen. That's the Rambam. But Rashi says, and the Dibur Matril that I'm bringing this Rashi on is a Dibur Matril that we haven't seen. It's from the Gemara. So we'll just skip the Dibur Matril. The Havelet Sorot, that it's to him is Sorot. Hilkap Mishalem Chatzinezek. Therefore you pay Chatzinezek. Vadam Hamadlik Mishum Chachi Chayav Nezek Shalem She'en Din Sorot Badam. Whereas the man who would put on fire under the same circumstances, the hay, therefore would pay full nezek, because there's no such thing as sorot with human beings. In other words, if a thief came into your oven and stole your cake and brought it to the Gadish and ate it, and a coal fell out of it and caused the hay to go up in flames and all of Donald Trump's mansion went up with it, the man would have to pay Nezek Shalem. Because even though it's Tzorot, but human beings are responsible for full damage money for Tzorot. Tzorot Chatzin Nezek is only with animals. Because the rule is Adam Mu'ad Le'olam. Human beings are always responsible for anything that happens as a result of their actions. Okay?
Okay.
That's Rashi in the Rambam. And then I brought here a passage from Baba Kama. I wonder if I listed that right. I'm not sure if I have the right page there. So anyway, it says, this is going to be interesting. It brings up an interesting question that has an easy, simple answer, but it's a good question anyway. Tashma, come in here. Gamal ta'un pishtan, a camel loaded with flax, va'avar b'rshut rabim, passing through the Rishut Rabim, nichnasa pishtano letocha chanut, went in his flax into the store. Right, so I'm leading my camel right by your store, and the camel is loaded up, and the pishtan stuck into the store door that was open. And what happened? Vildalku b'nero shel chenvani, and it lit from the nair of the store owner. Vidlikit de bera, and it burned down the city. What's the law? Balagamal Chayav. The owner of the camel pays. And if it says Chayav, it means Nezek Shalem.
What's Chayav mean?
Obligatory. Obligated. But if it meant Net Chatzi Nezek, it would say it. It means Nezek Shalem. Let's just read the rest of the source before we talk about it. I'm now in the sixth word of the line. He niach hen veni nerol b'chutz had left the store owner his ner outside, and then the pishtan lit it. Hen veni chayav. Then the store owner is responsible to pay for Donald Trump's mansion that burned down because he shouldn't have put his ner
outside.
Right. Mm-hmm. Reb Yehuda Omer ben ner Chanukah patur. If there's a case of Ner Hanukkah, then...
Well, because you were supposed to put...
Right.
Put it outside.
So don't...
But again, there was still the issue of putting it outside in a, so that it was not likely to do damage. It needed to be...
But if it was at the front of your store...
Of the street, but it still
that might
to be outside.
If it was like within four amot... I'm for Tfachim or for Amot.
I don't remember.
You would just have to watch the camel with the flax very carefully during that season.
Well, but the owner should have been paying attention to this camel.
The camel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the owner of the camel should have been watching because he knows
camel.
That this is the time
because
for Ner Hanukkah to be outside.
Yeah.
Okay, so why did I bring this? To ask a kushya.
Because it's almost Hanukkah.
But for another reason. Because... I don't understand. Look what happened here. Mm-hmm. I was leading my camel through Reshut Rabim, and the Pishtan stuck into your store a little bit, caused a whole conflagration. And the law is, I'm Chayav. Yes. But why in the case of my dog that stole the cake with the coal, I'm only have to pay half there. So the riddle is, what's the difference between the two cases? First, understand the question. It's a questioning of an animal causing a fire. In one place, if it's a camel, you have to pay Nezek Shalem. In another case, if it's a dog, you have to pay Chatzi Nezek. That's a big kusha. Shouldn't it be the same law? So what's the difference?
The Baal is present with the camel.
So what do you mean exactly?
Is that it becomes the responsibility of the Baal to take care of the camel and in his presence he becomes Hayav. He's the party that's
and I'm not responsible for my dog?
Your dog, you're not
the
present
dog
when your dog's
out
running around.
I think you're right. Very good. Right? In the case of the camel, it is the owner of the camel that directly did something to cause the flax to go into the store. It's not the camel's fault. In the case of the dog, it's the dog. And the dog is once removed from the owner. And there are different logs when dogs do damage. Animals do damage. Here, the camel did the damage. The owner did the damage. He was right there leading the camel. Yeah, you're right. I think that's the answer.
Well, too, though, the camel carries the flax or the hay with it. Now, if you had a work dog that carried stuff with it,
Yeah,
cake carrying dog.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I had one of those. That'd be great.
Yeah.
You could say, go and get me a cake.
With a coal on it.
Dogs only carry newspapers and slippers, and you don't want even one of them out the house.
In case, I think that's pretty clear.
That's pretty clear.
And that brings us to the next Mishnah. Mishnah 4. Here we go with Mishnah Dalet of this chapter. Chapter Bet. Ezehu tam ve'ezehu mu'ad. Which is a tam and which is a mu'ad? Mu'ad kol she'he'idu bo shlosha yamim. Tam Misha Yahazur Boshlosha Yamim, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Translation. The Muad is all that they warned it 3 days. And a tam...
3 days?
3 days, that's what it says, 3 days.
Yeah.
Shlosha yamim.
Oh, yeah.
And the tam, mishiyachzor bo shlosha yamim, from that it reverses itself 3 days, whatever that means. That's divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir Omer, mu'ad shi'idu bo shlosha pamim. V'tam kol shiyu hatinokot mimashmashin bo veino nogeach.
Okay.
Muad is that they warned it 3 times. Mm-hmm. And the tam is all that the kids play around with it and it doesn't gore.
Oh,
in other words, if your children are still alive...
Yes.
Yeah. What a tough way to test it.
Yeah, it's kind of strange, I must say.
It is strange.
So it seems to me that our first issue here is, are we talking about Shlosha Yamim or Shlosha Pamim?
Right. So what's the difference between Shlosha Yamim and Shlosha Pamim?
Might be warned 100 times in those 3 days.
Sure.
Might be warned 100 times
I'm
in those...
saying,
well,
but also, it doesn't matter the number of times you've been warned.
It doesn't matter how many times it goes.
No, it says yamim. It's for how long it's been goring. Has it been goring for 3 days? And people are saying,
right,
you should probably stop that. You should probably stop that. But if it gores 100 people in a 2 day period,
yeah,
then
right,
it's still time.
But on the other side of it is, if you gore once and now you don't gore again for another month, and then it's another month. I mean, because you didn't do it 3 days in a row.
It doesn't say 3 days in a row.
It's 3 days.
It
doesn't imply consecutive.
I don't think so.
They're saying yamim, but it sounds like they mean pa'amim.
Well, no, but that's the second opinion.
No, the second time.
Oh, that's the second one.
Rabbi Meir says shlosha pa'amim. 3 times.
At which point, I agree with you, Jeremy, that you could have done it 100 times in that one... in one day.
So long as it's not a complete day, and okay, well.
No, but I think that what Jeremy is saying is a little bit far-fetched.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Let me give another possible way of reading it.
Okay.
Rabbi Meir says 3 times, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Rabbi Yehuda says 3 days.
Mm-hmm. On 3 different occasions.
It says 3 days.
Right.
But of course... Rabbi Yehuda also agrees you need 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
He's just saying that the 3 times have to be on 3 separate days.
Mm-hmm.
Such that if it gored 3 times in one day, that doesn't make it yet the mu'ad.
It's just in bad mood that day.
It's in
No, but like if it was something happened and scared him and started running
after a whole bunch of people in one day.
All you need is 3 people to say, "Hey, watch that bull," and then like in 3 minutes you're done with your 3, and
that's right.
Yeah.
Now
right.
By the 4th you're in the
shalem. Yeah, that's how we get 3 strikes and you're out.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like we're talking about the running of the bulls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this makes sense, right? Rabbi Meir says 3 times because that's what the Torah says.
Yeah, but that would because that's humans in back of all of that.
Yeah.
That would probably be in a whole different category.
But Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the 3 times have to be on 3 separate days because otherwise it might just be a freak occurrence. Something spooked the animal that particular day, but it's not a reason to think it's going to do it again on a different day.
Mm-hmm.
Could be. Let's go to the questions I asked. Which earlier Mishnah does this Mishnah seem to be expanding upon?
Wait a minute, is that Mishnah 4 on the So one where it says five classes or agents of entry or accounting.
Yes, it is. In other words, right, that's it. The last Mishnah, the fourth Mishnah, Perek Aleph, is the one that differentiated between Tam and Muad. So now we're going back and telling us what it actually is to be a Muad. So we see, really, that this whole chapter is all elaborating on the last Mishnah of the previous chapter. We're elaborating what is Shein and what is Regel, and we elaborated Mishnah Gimel on the elaborations, and now we're elaborating on the Tam and Muad. It's all an elaboration of the last Mishnah of the previous Perek. My second question is very simple also. Which of the Avot Nizikin is our Mishnah referring to? Is it Shein, Regel, or Karen?
Karen.
Of course it's Karen, because there's no such thing as distinguishing between Tam and Muad in Shein and Regel, only in Karen. It's pretty straightforward. Question three. We did already. What would appear to be the crux of the difference of opinion vis-a-vis the Muad? We said it's probably that all agree you need three times. The question is, three times even in the same day or only in different days? That's the machloket. Question four. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that was the first opinion, under what circumstances would we know that the animal chazar bo shlosha yamim? Right, that's what he says. To make it a tam, it has to reverse itself 3 days. What does that mean? If it gored for three times in three separate days, and then 3 days pass, it's no longer a muad? It's back to being a tam.
Would have to, this time would have to elapse before it hit the three times.
Say it again, please.
This time between would have to hit, though, before it hit the third time of goring.
Yeah.
So let's say it gores on three different days, but as you said, they're not consecutive.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But it may not be.
Day one, day three, and day five.
Yeah.
That's 3 days.
Right.
I think it just means that whatever it is, it has to be reversed. So,
but tell me how it works. So let's say that this animal gored on days 1, 2, and 3, at days 1, 3, and 5, and it became an official muad. It got a cap and a tie that says, I'm a muad.
So now it has to go a certain length of time. Does it have to go, are we saying it has to go a certain length of time of not doing it again before we declassify?
That's what I'm asking. Are we saying that?
Yeah, it's like it has to have the same opportunity. So it just depends on what the situation is. If the animal comes to the community and it just got bought and it's bad for 3 days, then it has to go 3 days without being bad. If the animal is bad when it's around children, you know, three different times, then it has to be good around children.
Exactly. In other words, it has to have had the opportunity to gore and pass it up. It's not just that it was in a cage and 3 days passed. It has to be out with other animals or out with children.
Okay. Yeah.
That's the point. If this animal gored other oxen for three, let's say, consecutive days or non-consecutive, then it has to later be with the same things he had gored and not gore.
Sounds like
teshuva. That's what it sounds like. It does.
Exactly.
He was sorry.
Yeah, but he didn't really do teshuva without having it.
Right, he has to be in the same situation.
Be in the same situation and not done it again.
Now, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. And that's simple to understand. What about Rabbi Meir, who says the last six words of the Mishnah, seven words, Kol shiyu hatinokot mimash mashin bo veino nogeach. All that the kids play around with it, and it doesn't gore. So clearly, there's a matter of provoking the ox here. It's not just that time passes and has the opportunity not to gore, but actually the kids provoke it, and it still doesn't gore. But it's still not clear here. Is that the only condition, that the kids provoke it? Do they have to provoke it three times? Or only once? doesn't say. It doesn't say.
No.
Because remember, Rabbi Meir said three times mm-hmm. makes it a goring ox.
Mm-hmm.
Could be three times the same day. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Yehuda said three separate days. The same day. Okay, so let's say that it gored three times the same day, became a mu'ad, and now the kids provoke it. Does that mean if they provoke it for 1 second, or just 5 minutes, then it become and it doesn't gore, it becomes a non-goring ox? So does it have to be three different times, or three different days? The Mishnah doesn't say that. And we don't know. We don't know what Rabbi Meir holds about any type of time frame. It doesn't say any time frame for becoming a tam after having been a mu'ad.
Well, it has to just pass this very strenuous test.
But is it only a 5-minute test, or is it more than that? It doesn't say.
Well, I think the fact that it says children indicates that it's, you know, you wouldn't, you don't just, you know, put it out with your pet dog or something. It children have to be able to be with it.
Who's going to really let children get next to a mu'ad?
Yeah, I don't know.
Mu'ad is very
somebody who's very experimental and is extremely concerned about taking this ox out into the more concerned about taking the ox out to the market than about his children.
But it says reports.
Maybe he's got 15 children and he's somewhere expendable.
So I just want to comment here on
We're
this
in
question.
Indian, he gets rid of the girls.
Because it passed on the name somehow.
Mm-hmm. I would have, having read the Mishnah about an ox becoming a mu'ad,
mm-hmm.
and having not read what it said about becoming a tam after having been a mu'ad, I would have intuitively said that once you're a mu'ad, you're a mu'ad for life.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm.
That's what I would have said.
Mm.
Right? Once a pit bull dog gores, it's a goring.
Well, you know, these dog people, they don't really think that way.
No. I understand, mm-hmm. but I'm telling you what I would have thought.
Mm-hmm.
So then I ask myself, say it again?
That's what you, I mean, that's what I would have
thought. Yeah. So why does this Mishnah have a possibility of tshuva for oxen? Mm-hmm. There's a machloket, what it is, but both agree, if you're the mayor, that a dog can do. An ox, excuse me, can do tshuva. Why? And the answer, I think, is simple. You have to imagine the society we're talking about. It's a mm-hmm. society in which everything
yes,
depends
important.
On animals. Mm-hmm. Specifically on oxen. It's really, to say to someone that your ox is a mu'ad...
is a waste. It's
a loss of a livelihood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And remember, a mu'ad, you're allowed to keep a mu'ad. You'll just be responsible with nezek shalem if it does any damage. You better be careful. But you're allowed to keep it and use it. And the rabbis here are giving a possibility of an ox doing tshuva because you have to. Because the society, I think, is based upon the usage of oxen all the time.
Right.
And if someone would have, let's say, 5 oxen that were mu'adim and have to watch them every single moment, he just couldn't make a living.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and also, it could be some plot that somebody had to ruin the value of your ox by saying...
So he provoked it with a few children, and then... yeah. And the matter of the kids playing with it, it's not that the guy thinks his kids are expendable and he sends them to play with the ox, but there's always oxen around, and there's always children around.
That's right. Yeah.
Just that's the way society is structured, mm-hmm. right? Okay, let's see what else I have asked here. We talked about that. We talked about that. So I just wanted to talk about the internal consistency of each of these two opinions. So let's just note that Reb Yehuda seems to say that it is rather difficult to create a mu'ad, and it's easy to tame it. Whereas Rabbi Meir says, it's easy to create a mu'ad, and it's harder to tame it. And it's basically an ideological, and that's a consistency. Because Rabbi Yehuda is saying that there should be less muadim around. It's hard to make one, and it's easy to get rid of that status. Whereas Rabbi Meir makes it easier to become a muad, even in one day can become a muad, and it's harder to get rid of that. You only get rid of it when the axe has been provoked. So that's a consistency. As far as you could say that Rabbi Yehuda is more in favor of farmers' rights, mm-hmm. it's hard to lose your ox and easy to get it back. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is more in favor of what I call them children's rights or mm-hmm. property rights of the damagee.
Rabbi Meir, you're saying.
Rabbi Meir. Thank you, Rabbi Meir. That it's easy to come to a situation which you lose your ox to become a goring ox, and it's harder to get rid of that status. Mm-hmm. And we're really talking here about the relative weight of the rights of the damagee as opposed to the rights of the damager, mm-hmm. and you have to weigh them. You can say that Rabbi Yehuda is more in favor of big business, he's a Republican, and Rabbi Meir is more a Democrat. Well, I'm serious in what I'm saying. There's an mm-hmm. ideological basis here to their machloket.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What I want to end with is the Talmudic passage that I brought. And it takes something simple and makes it perhaps more complicated. So it says the Gemara on this Mishnah, Gemara Mai Tama de Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reasoning of Rabbi Yehuda? That's the first opinion. Amar Abaye, Tmol Chad, Mitmol Trei, Shilshom Talata, Velo Yishmerenu, Balav, Atanan Lenikicha Revi'it. Translation, Abai is going back to the verses we've seen many times. Mm-hmm. And you know, it said that if your ox was a goring ox, etmol shilshom. So Abai darshens the word etmol, that's once. Yesterday, gored yesterday. Mm-hmm. May etmol, ready is twice. It did it etmol and also from etmol, from before yesterday. That's twice, he says. Shilshom, the day before yesterday, that's already a third time. Below Yishmeno Ba'alav, and the owners didn't watch it, Etna Et'an, which means we've come to the Nigiha Revi'it. We've come to the Nigiha Revi'it. Whereas Rava Amar, Tmol Mitmol Had. Doesn't matter if it says Etmol or Me'etmol, it's the same thing. Don't darshan the Mem. It means one time. Shilshom Trei, that's the second time. Below Yishmoreno, Ha'idna Chayav. At this time, it's Chayav. In other words, already when you get to the third time, it's Chayav. So just let's read for a minute what Rashi says about that. Look at Rashi. Et an l'nigiha revit. We've come into nigiha revit. Shimlo shamru v'nagach nigiha revit. Mishalem me'aliyan ezek shalem. Aval ashlishit palga nizkahu demishalem. Rashi is very clear, and he says that if you didn't watch it, and it gored a fourth goring, you pay nizik shalem. But on the third goring, you only pay half. So Rashi says, according to Abaye, says it's only the fourth time that it gores that you have to pay nizik shalem. Mm-hmm. Three times, you get three strikes, and you're not out. Three strikes, you're not out. Three strikes, you become a muad. You still don't pay anything, and so it happens a fourth time.
That's right. That. Yeah, right.
Whereas, now going back to the Gemara, Rav Amar, the third word of the second line, Rav Amar, mitmol is chad, shilshom is trei, lo yishmereno, ha'idna chayav. That's when it's chayav. You're chayav the third time already. And says Rashi, below Yishmerenu Ha'idna, you didn't watch it this time. Benigihash Lishit Chayav Balianzik Shalem. And the third time you have to pay. So it's a machloket. How many times makes it a muad? Our Mishnah seems to say, right, that three times, then the fourth time you're out. Mm-hmm. And that's what Abai says. But Rava says no. It's not three times the fourth time you're out. It's three
you're
times
out the third time.
You're out in the third time.
Well, that could really cause some problems.
Mm-hmm. And we'll end with the last seven or eight, actually 10 words of the Gemara that is at the top of the page here. It's the end of the second line. Mm-hmm. Four words from the end of the line. The Rebbe Meir, my ta'ama. What's the reasoning of Rebbe Meir? Going back to our Mishnah, mm-hmm. right, who says...
It was the one that said the children... So the children have to...
Right, that the children have to provoke it, and only then does it become... I'm sorry. We're talking about not the Tam, we're talking about the Mu'at.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And Rebbe Yehuda had said that it's day. 3 days.
And Meir
said three days. Times. Mm-hmm. So says the Gemara, my time. The Tanya, as we learned in the Braita. Amar Rebbe Meir. Meir says, Richek negi chotav chayav kirev negi chotav lo kol shaken. If there's a distance between its goring, then it's chayav. It becomes a muad, the three separate days. Kirev negichotav. It clustered its negichot. Isn't it all the more so? As if an animal gores three separate days, it's a muad, and all the more so if it gores all that goring at one shot, says Rabbi Meir. In other words, that shows you how bad the animal is. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda would say, no, it doesn't show how bad it is. It just might have been provoked on that day. Then that's the machloket, according to the Gemara. Right, shlosha pa'amim, even in one day, because that shows it to be a really bad ox. Rabbi Yehuda would say, no, it just shows it to have been provoked. Something happened that day.
It's caught a whole bunch of people.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because again, Rabbi Yehuda is the one that seems to be lenient towards the goring ox owner. Like, that's what I call it, like big business or publican, if you will. Whereas Rabbi Meir says, no, even if it gored in the same day three times, because that's even worse, according to him. Okay.
Would it make a would Are we talking about the number of people gored or the number of distinct incidents? Because I can think about there being multiple people around mm-hmm. and an ox being provoked and multiple people being gored versus, yeah. you know, a goring that happens and then something else transpires and now another situation occurs. Mm-hmm. It could all still be within one day.
You're right.
But there could be time between them, which would imply... A difference,
right.
So it's not just the number of people, but how many separate right. instances mm-hmm. of individual...
Right. Makes more sense.
Right, mm-hmm. So in other words, I get the following point you're saying. When you get to Rabbi Meir, who says shlosha pamim and not necessarily shlosha yamim, so then you get to a situation of, okay, but how do you define a pam?
Mm-hmm.
How do you define what one time is?
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Good question.
Mm-hmm.
Good question. The halacha, I think, is like Rabbi Yehuda on that matter, so we don't have to halacha lamaase and ask that question. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, we did two Mishnayot in one day. That's a record for us.
Record is, right?
Yeah.
We've never gone this fast.
Oh.
Because Ilana's not here.
Partially because Ilana's not here, and partially because these are short, very short Mishnayot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I know she's listening.
And they're all related. So the next time we discuss whether you should